Learning about dignity and having that helps me in my recovery, that I have the right to all of those things doing with dignity. I have the right to feel safe. I have the right just to be a human being, to be free, to think and express myself, not to be shamed or felt guilty about all those things. And then as I work with others in recovery, to look at their dignity and to honor that. And when I honor theirs, I also honor mine. And so that's been a real sense of belonging and helpfulness and seeing how other people do it. And so the dignity part, knowing that I always have it, that I don't have to earn it, which also means I don't lose it.
This is the Dignity Lab, a weekly podcast in which we share stories of dignity, its violations, and its reclamation. Your dignity is your inherent worth or value. Dignity is both essential and vulnerable to harm. The good news is that no matter who you are, no matter what has happened to you, no matter what you have done, you can reclaim your dignity. Tune in to hear stories of inspiration, healing, and leadership. Hosted by physician and leadership coach, Dr. Jennifer Griggs.
Our guest this week is Dr. Fred Coulter. Fred is an ordained minister and professor emeritus at Defiance College. He's also a friend of my husband. In our conversation, we cover everything from his evolving identity as he moves into retirement, his faith, his 10 years of recovery, the power of belonging, contentment, and the ways in which dignity has shown up in his life. We also talk about how our purpose can be commodified, and he has some advice for me at the end. After welcoming Fred to the podcast, I asked him how he wanted to be introduced.
I would say, you know, if you want to put me as Professor Emeritus at Defiance College, that's fine. Reverend Doctor's fine, because a lot of those are part of my identity. But being retired, they're not my identity anymore. They're not it, but they're still very important. A couple of days after I retired, I went to my Facebook page and just put retired, took down all of my little titles and just retired. Didn't even put Professor Emeritus, just retired. I realized, you know, the downside of my retirement, of giving up that identity, is all of a sudden a lot of the shadow work that I repressed and resisted, because I was working and I had to get classes and I had to do this, and I could put all those off. Well, they're saying, saying, hello, we're over here. And so a lot of times I've been waking up, you know, 3-4 in the morning with anxious dreams. And so I wake up and I journal. And so I write the dream down, write what it means to me. And then I take it to the shredder and shred it. And in a lot of ways, it's just coming to grips with who my mother was, who my father was, wonderful, loving people, flawed, and putting that all together. And, you know, which also means, you know, looking at my flawed self and putting that, holding that together.
I asked Fred to share how he was introduced to the concept of dignity.
Oh, well, I get introduced through your husband, Steve. Steve and I were colleagues at the college. And so at different times, we'd joke about it where I'd say, hey, Steve, let me come up to your house. I need a play date, you know, so we can have coffee and talk and have a little play date, you know. And 2-3 hours could pass just very quickly. I think you had invited me to your workshop about a year ago. And that really was a transformational experience. I think one thing about the dignity part and why I said yes and wanted to come to talk to about it today and some in my own life is how I knew all those elements of dignity, but I hadn't connected the dots and put them together in that way. And when you said that day a year ago, and I'm still digesting it, making it a part of me, that we are born with dignity and it is our right. And I've really spent, I started then, I'm still doing it, claiming my dignity. And I have a right to say to somebody else, I'm really, I knew you have violated my dignity, and either we're going to do something about it. Either you're going to change or else I'm just not going to hang around. And that's been my other part of retirement is I just don't put myself into situations where I have to put up with things anymore. I've dropped off of committees. Not that committees are bad or whatever, or groups, but you have to sit there and shut up. And I just don't want to shut up anymore. And before that, for 15 years, I served two churches as a minister. And so I'm ordained in the United Church of Christ and still do work with the church and the denomination. That's still an active part of my life. And that started my spirituality and understanding. And so that's why I was introduced to Jung and the wholeness and the shadow. And so that helped me. And to circle back to dignity, I said, and that's what Jesus was doing. When I look at the Beatitudes, when I look at his life, who he was, what he did, I said, he embodied dignity. And what made, I believe, made him so popular at the time is he went around and said to the oppressed people, you're worthy. You belong. You're not on the margins. You're not an outcast. You are loved and valuable. And in fact, why don't you come along and follow me?
Belonging is such an important part of being human.
Well, it's like he knew, he understood you can't take the Roman Empire on head on because they will crush you. So he thought of another way to do that. And so he talked about his kingdom as being within that belonging. You belong. You're part of us. And I believe that was the attraction to him and the attraction to the early church was that they got together at meals and shared, food, shared community, shared belonging, and they all cared for each other. And they said, wow, this really makes a difference. Let's keep doing it. I feel so much better after getting together. And so all this in terms of that dignity is that's part of my quest of retirement is finding those people who give me a sense of belonging that I can just talk to we're sort of doing now. I think we have our context of time, but there's really not an agenda. We need to say some meaningful things. However, there isn't. Okay, Fred, here's point number one, point number two, point number three, point number four. Oh, Fred, you didn't do point number three. Back. You know, that sort of thing. So I've been looking at more and more of opportunities to be with people where there's not an agenda.
You used the word playdate earlier. What do you think play has to do with dignity, if anything?
Oh, it has so much to do with it. My interest and my doctoral work had to do with human development and families. And so I've really had an interest, especially in child development. And Piaget said, play is the work of a child. So play and dignity, it gives you, and especially when you find in dignity, a safe place with somebody psychologically and physically safe. You can play around. You can joke. You can say things. You can be vulnerable. You can reveal yourself. And so the dignity part allows me to play with it instead of looking at dignity like these are rules or these are things I have to live up to, answer, pass, all those criteria. I look at them as just, a safe place is where two people can just laugh and enjoy each other's company.
In addition to play and vulnerability and belonging, I'm also hearing freedom in the things you're thinking about.
A real freedom. I want to say, as much I can say, this is glorious. You know, it's scary, too, because I'm doing things I just haven't done.
Fred talks about his conversations with a friend who also recently retired and the ways in which their conversations have changed with time.
Both of us are good enough we can admit, yeah, I'm anxious about things. I'm worried about that. Or she and I spend some time, we spend a lot of time redefining productivity. The other part that I hit probably in my 50s was that I had enough. I love Kurt Vonnegut. And there's a story that Kurt Vonnegut was at a cocktail party reception with Joseph Heller, Catch 22. And the host was some bigwig rich guy. And Vonnegut said something to Heller like, "Hey, do you realize that this guy just made more in one day than you did on Catch 22? And Heller said, "Yeah, but I have one thing he doesn't." Vonnegut, "What's that?" "Enough. I have enough." And when I read that, it affirmed where I was going in my life. I really have enough. And so I catch myself saying, "Do I need more?" No.
Seems to me like contentment is the hardest thing to find. Chasing contentment feels somehow like a paradox. What it sounds like you're saying is that you're looking at both having enough and being enough.
Yes. And that's the scariest part, is being enough for myself. Because, and that's just part of our society. And at some point, you're just part of the system. If you want a job, if you want a pension, you got to be part of the system.
Do you think our present day world is ready for something different?
I being part of the church, especially I'm in a mainline denomination that is shrinking. When I was ordained in 1980, it had 2.2 million members. We're now down to 800,000. Some of that is because of our polity, or the way we govern ourselves. Churches can leave the denomination on their own. We don't have bishops. We're not real hierarchical. And people have left because the people who have remained, and I'll put mine in that category, are being very inclusive. And that's the flip side of the Dignity Lab. Oh, yes, I can claim my right to dignity. But that also says I have to respect other people's dignity.
I would imagine that in all your roles, you have witnessed suffering and sometimes great suffering.
We as a society don't know how to deal with people's pain, death, grief. But I have seen people who have done everything right in life, and yet that didn't keep them from pain. You know, it's to say, and especially I feel back in the 80s, yeah, I worked, each one of my churches worked with the families who experienced sudden infant death syndrome. One family fell apart. Another got involved in the SIDS network, and we worked together, and I was part of that. And so they did something with it. So, at the same time, for the family fell apart, there was other issues around that, but, they did say they appreciated how, and I worked with them, got to know them, and ultimately did the committal service of their daughter's ashes. And the grandparents are there, and family. It's more of a family thing than the church service. But they remember the grandmother saying to me, "Thank you for leaving out all that God talk about God's will, better place, da 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 da." You just said, "This is hard, it's awful, and you just have to sit with it." And so that's how I saw people remake their lives. It'd be more in that context of pain and grief and death and just learning how to sit with it and sit with them.
That feels like dignity mm-hmm. to me, mm-hmm. that they were okay just as they were. They didn't have to earn your compassion. They just were, just the way they were.
Yeah, there's a woman in my church who was killed in an accident, and I needed to go talk to, this is a prominent family in the church and in the town and all this, and we're making plans for the funeral and everything, and the sister was angry because it was a senseless death. You know, and so she was saying, oh, yeah, we'll go to church, we'll sing a few songs, we'll hear a few nice words, then we'll go have a little nice lunch afterwards in the church hall, then we'll go home. And I was like, yeah, that's about it. I mean, because that's about all we can do.
We are overall impoverished in our culture in terms of rituals, with, of course, some important exceptions. Yeah, you're right. Our traditions, including our faith communities, don't, I think some better than others, can sit with grief, but we don't have rituals.
Or I think also she was angry that she expected that to fix it and make it all better. And, yeah. And I was also willing to say, no, it's not. We just do that. I mean, this is what we do. But right. That, no, I don't think that's going to make it all better.
Do you think there are times when rituals can help honor the dignity of the person who is gone?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My mother's birthday is August 3rd. And usually around August 3rd, my sisters and I text back and forth, happy birthday to Mom. She's been gone about 10 years. But we all enjoy a little pimento and cheese because that was her favorite. My younger sister said, yes, with toasted cheese points, those little triangles of toasted bread. And that's just a ritual to remember her. And I mean, when I get a little, misty eyed and about talking about her now because I'm getting to know her again. You know, I said my mother is very loving, caring. My father was a career naval officer, so he was gone half our lives. And so she had to take care of three kids and a house and all our lives. And she did a remarkable job. At the same time, she had mental health issues. She's psychotic. And so she would have psychotic breaks and attempt suicide and all these things. And at that, and that's sort of what I learned growing up, and I'm still, and that's back dealing with is that was the 50s, 60s. You know, I didn't talk about those things. And so, so part of my journey and with the dignity is giving my mother dignity. Because, yes, I was very angry with her at different times, and we were manipulated. And at the same time, she's also very loving and caring. Yes. And so that's the ritual of pimento and cheese, to honor and remember that.
Thank you for sharing that. I'm wondering about the role of dignity in recovery. You've been in recovery for 10 years now. And I think you've pointed out before, we're all in recovery from something. I'd love to hear your thoughts on recovery and dignity.
Learning about dignity and having that helps me in my recovery, that I have the right to all of those things doing with dignity. I have the right to feel safe. I have the right just to be a human being, to be free, to think and express myself, not to be shamed or felt guilty about all those things. And then as I work with others in recovery to look at their dignity and to honor that. And when I honor theirs, I also honor mine. And so that's been a real sense of belonging and helpfulness and seeing how other people do it And so the dignity part, knowing that I always have it, that I don't have to earn it, which also means I don't lose it, has really been a good way in my recovery to look at it every day, to say, okay, I have dignity and I can do these things. And I can say, yes, yeah, I mean, 10 years, that's great. At the same time, I drank for 40 years. So my therapist said, yeah, you can go and make amends or talk about those things to people that you remember you did, those things you remember. It's like, oh gosh, how about those things I don't? Yeah. And that's part of where dignity helps, because sometimes some of that can be so crushing that you get, and I know people, and I've seen it happen, you get the, you know, forget about it, you know, the effort. I'm just crushed, you know, I'm just not humble, I'm humiliated by all that.
Right. And, same root word, right. Completely different experience. Right.
And so, if I'm humiliated, then why? Who cares?
So you use the word crushing. That sounds like despair.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I didn't realize, I mean, I was pretty good at faking it, or not even faking. Again, like my mother, I could be loving and caring and helpful and all these things, and also be an alcoholic all at the same time. You could say, fortunately, I didn't lose my job. I was able to function. You know, I felt a functioning alcoholic, but I experienced despair. I experienced it. I can't stop. In fact, I really don't want to either. So it wasn't until I went into recovery that I started to see some hope and see people who have experienced despair, and they seem just fine. And so I learned how to, I don't know if it's not despair. Actually, my moment was one day when I realized that the people in the recovery community showed me how to be honest, because they were honest with themselves. And I realized I wasn't honest with myself. What really held me back was, I thought, let's use you as an example, Jennifer. I could say, I'm going to have to go and talk to Jennifer and say, you know, I'm sorry about the way I acted or the things I did, because, you know, I'm an alcoholic. And it occurred to me the day that I realized, I really started getting serious about it, that, Jennifer, you always knew I was an alcoholic. The only person I was fooling was me. So where I see that dignity part is, boy, that's in me. I got it. I deserve, I, talking to myself, deserve to do things that are healthy for me. I deserve to be vulnerable and talk to people about my issues, and for them to say, you have to do this, you have to do that. You have to examine your life. No, not that. Because what would happen if I looked at all those awful things, all those mistakes? What would happen to me? And that's part of my family of origin. I mean, and I'm not, you know, my father worked very hard to be an officer in the Navy, and in fact, enlisted in World War II and went through a commissioning process and stayed in for 32 years until he was a captain. But there's just that sense of, I can't be vulnerable. That was a little why I told myself, you know, yeah, those mistakes, but you just put those behind you. Just keep pushing forward. And
It's interesting as you're talking about vulnerability, and I'm wondering, does vulnerability allow for self-forgiveness?
What it is for me is, and that's part of my writing, my journaling that I do, is about myself. I'm reflecting to myself. I mean, yes, I'm writing about situations. I'm writing about dreams. But I always know it's about me. And so, like, one this morning, briefly, it was like I'm walking down a road. It's like the wintertime around here. Tall trees, mist, gray. I'm feeling fine. And I see a person down the road, and I know in dream interpretation, that's me. It's just a person because I didn't identify it as anybody. And for some reason, I'm carrying a leg, like thigh, knee, calf, you know, and it kind of sits on this side and goes back here. So the thigh's on the side and a leg. And for some reason, it's navy blue. We can go into that at some point. But I'm walking along carrying it, and I see that person, I smile, and everything's fine. But then I turn to the right to go down another road, and everything's just fine. And I'm writing this, and this didn't cause anxiety or anything. I mean, it woke me up, but I wrote about it, and I thought, maybe I'm taking a spare leg for the journey. You know? I mean, you know, one leg might give out. You know, I'm getting older, so my left hip feels a little achy sometimes. Maybe I need a little backup, for the journey. And my vulnerability says there that, and I remember writing it right at the end, yeah, I'm on the road, it's about healing. And just kind of left it at that. But the vulnerability part in this journaling allows me to look at myself and say who I am and what I'm thinking or who are these people. And just right there to admit that I need healing. I'm still broken in places. I'm still, I don't know. I can find despair pretty fast. You know, I mean, all those things that I point behind me, the shadow, it's all there, you know, and at times I kind of laugh or I say, well, hey, you despair, why don't you come up here and have a seat next to me? Let's have a cup of coffee, you know? Hey, how you doing, despair? You know, and I kind of joke about it, but I said, it's just part of me. And so I think that's the other part of, I knew early on in my life, and I just didn't know what to do with it. But I realize now, I joke about it because that's part of my defense mechanisms. But I also want to say when I really talk about despair sitting next to me, that's me. and that's part of my recovery and healing is to say, you know, I got a boatload of despair. Okay, and who doesn't? We all got it. And it's all here. And I can't make despair go away. I can't do that thing that our society says, oh, Fred, take the despair course, and in three easy steps, you'll eradicate despair. I says, no, I don't. I just learned to live with it. I learned to recognize it. And I think that's where the Dignity Lab, your approach has really caught me, is that it's really acknowledging all those feelings. They're all there. How do we live with them is the real challenge.
If you had one wish for our listeners, what would it be?
If I was listening when I was younger, don't afraid to be honest with yourself, which means you need to find those people that will tell you honestly what's going on. And you believe in them so much, you will really listen and really take it in. And you gave me that space to look at past relationships with my former wife and all this. And you gave me space to do that. And that helped me to get where I am today. So, yes, you're a part of that.
What an honor. Fred, is there one thing, is there anything I didn't ask you that you hoped I would?
Oh, didn't necessarily ask me, but I'll tell you. And one of the podcasts I listened to is two women, probably in their 30s, and they said, the push is now we need to find purpose in our lives. And one woman said, oh, yes, but you need to pray and to find the purpose that God has for your life. And then you need to start blogging about it. And then you need to form a podcast. And then you need to monetize it with workshops. And then, oh, but don't stop there. There's more. You know, once you have monetized your, then you need to write books and you need to go on book tours. And then you need to have a foundation for your purpose. Oh, but you can't have your foundation. You need to have a legacy so that when you die, your purpose, whatever that God gave to you, you know. And what they're saying is, that's a lot of work. Why are we falling for this?
Thank you for this reminder. It occurs to me that purpose can become commodified and we can believe that we're not actually enough.
I mean, when you, if a question that I'm answering that I wish you'd ask in that sense of just, what have I learned? And it's just our society, our economic system says, you better be the best or don't even start.
Would you like to read the part of the Bob Dylan song your friend Norm shared with you last week?
Dylan says, so many roads, so much at stake. So many dead ends, I'm at the edge of the lake. Sometimes I wonder what it's going to take to find dignity.
Fred Coulter, thank you so much for being on the Dignity Lab.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jennifer.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Dignity Lab. Hearing Fred at this chapter in his life, rediscovering and reintegrating dignity in all the facets of his life as he moves forward into this new chapter was really powerful. What were your thoughts as you listened? We'd love to hear from you. You can contact us on our website, thedignitylab.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review us and share with someone you know. This helps us build our audience. And if you leave a review and send a screenshot to jennifer@jennifergriggs.com, we'll send you a small gift.
This has been the Dignity Lab with Dr. Jennifer Griggs. If you have experienced a dignity violation or have a dignity dilemma and want to be a guest on our show, contact us through our website, www.thedignitylab.com. Guests may remain anonymous. And if you're a leader wanting to uplevel your leadership with a small community of like-minded people, please visit our website to learn more about our group program for leaders. Our website also has free downloadable resources. More information about our guests can be found in each episode's show notes. This season of the Dignity Lab is produced by me, Vanessa Aaron. Pete Carty is our audio engineer and sound designer. Casey Frenette is our executive assistant, and Chase Miller composed our theme music. This podcast is for educational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional advice, diagnosis, or treatment. The content discussed is intended to explore and raise awareness about dignity. Sensitive topics may be discussed that could evoke strong emotions, so discretion is advised. Listeners are encouraged to engage with the material with empathy. Remember, be gentle with yourself. You are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars.